Russia slams U.S. missile plans in Poland as unjustified. Iran says it's ready for talks if the P5 plus one meets Tehran's conditions. 4 U.S.-led troops die in Afghanistan amid rising militancy. And the Netherlands book a spot in the World Cup finals.
Hello everyone, it's 2:30 a.m. here in Tehran and you're watching the news here on Press TV.
Many thanks for joining us. Russia has criticized the deployment of a U.S. missile system in Poland as unjustified. Russia's deputy foreign minister says Washington and Warsaw have failed to heed Moscow's concerns in this regard. Sergei Ryabkov has also rejected U.S. claims that the missile system is intended to counter missile threats from Iran. Ryabkov said Moscow sees no danger from Iran, which would justify the construction of such a missile system by the United States. The U.S. and Poland have signed the deal in Warsaw, under which Washington will deploy SM-3 missiles in northern Poland from 2015 to 2018. Russia has repeatedly criticized the U.S. plans to station missile interceptors near its borders. Moscow says any such move threatens its security. Well, controversy is sharpening over the issue of Israeli settlements. As reports show, the United States Treasury is helping to promote illegal Israeli settlements.
Well, reports say Israeli settlers in the occupied Palestinian lands have received millions of dollars through U.S. Treasury tax breaks.
A New York Times investigation shows at least 40 American groups have raised over $200 million in tax-deductible gifts for the Israeli settlers over the past decade. The report blames lenient American tax regulations that allow funds to be funneled into settlement outposts that are not only illegal under international law, but also under Israeli law. Analysts say the funds undermine the Middle East peace process Washington claims to support.
The result is a surprising juxtaposition. As the American government seeks to end a four-decade Jewish settlement enterprise and foster a Palestinian state in the West Bank, the American Treasury helps sustain the settlements through tax breaks and donations to support them.
The report shows that part of the money is paid for legally questionable commodities, housing, as well as guard dogs, rifle scopes and vehicles to secure outposts deep in the occupied areas. This, as Washington has consistently refused to allow Israel to spend American government aid in the settlements. Meanwhile, Palestinians express outrage at the move and say the Israelis plan to change the demography of the region.
What the United States has been doing is completely contradictory to what we hear from the U.S. president and the U.S. officials concerning this issue. And it's the problem with the Palestinians, who are unwilling to understand that neither Israel nor the United States are very serious about stopping the settlement activities. Now I am talking to you, and I see the settlements around my house, around Nablus, and I see new housing units just rising up every day. The settlement activity is not going on only in Jerusalem, but also in the West Bank. And I have to mention also that it's a process of changing the whole demographic and geographic situation in the West Bank, so it will be annexed in the future to Israel. There is a process of turning the West Bank into a Jewish zone, into a Jewish region.
The funding groups in the U.S. are using tax-exempt donations to help Israelis establish permanence in the occupied territories, a move that effectively obstructs the creation of a Palestinian state, which is widely seen as a necessary condition for Middle East peace.
Israel says it has eased the three-year-old blockade of the Gaza Strip. An Israeli statement says Tel Aviv has eased restrictions on supplies via land routes. It says the sea blockade will remain in force. Israeli siege and its deadly offensive on Gaza at the turn of 2009 destroyed the economy and infrastructure of the Palestinians. Tel Aviv continued its siege despite the UN Security Council Resolution 1860. The resolution signed last year called for an unimpeded supply of food, fuel and medicine to Gaza. Israel has recently come under intense international pressure to lift the blockade. This after Israeli forces launched an attack on a Gaza-bound aid flotilla back in May, leaving 9 peace activists dead. Our correspondent in Gaza says Israel's announcement that it's easing its siege on the coastal strip is only aimed at deceiving the international community.
Israel has created a blacklist banning certain items from entering the besieged coastal strip. Now, the prospects of building Gaza after its, after Israel's 22-day war on Gaza remain uncertain, as Israel is still not allowing the building materials, which are badly needed. Israel is deceiving the world, and since the Gazans, they are still trapped in Gaza, they are still suffering. The unemployment is very high. Poverty is very high. As a matter of fact, many, a large number of Gaza children are malnourished because their fathers, they cannot find work to feed their families. So the picture is still a gloom here. Gazans, they still did not feel any change on the ground. What is needed, according to the Palestinians, according to Hamas officials, according to the pro-Palestinian activists, they're saying Israel should lift the siege completely.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been greeted by protests on his visit to the White House for talks on the Middle East peace process. Protesters chanted slogans against Israel's crippling siege on Gaza. They also demanded that Washington stop funding what they called Israeli terror and free Palestine. Netanyahu's visit to Washington comes shortly after the U.S. called for direct talks between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. Acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas has ruled out direct talks unless Israel clarifies its stance on East Jerusalem al-Quds, frontiers and security. Well, to discuss this more, I'm joined all the way from Washington by Hossein Ibish. He's a senior fellow with the American Task Force on Palestine. Welcome to the program, sir. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is in the United States for talks. What is there in the timing of his visit?
Well, the timing of his visit really is a reflection of the flotilla attack last month. I mean, he was scheduled to come here directly from Canada at the time of the attack on the flotilla that left 9 civilians dead. And I think the Americans didn't really want another embarrassment of a photo opportunity of the President Obama standing next to Prime Minister Netanyahu in that context. So the visit was postponed. Now, in the intervening period, there was a Palestinian visit by President Arafat and his entourage in the middle of the month that was supposed to follow Netanyahu's. And that visit was extremely successful. I mean, one of the most successful diplomatic trips the Palestinians have had to the United States. They were able to reach very broad agreement with the United States on most major outstanding issues, especially the question of direct negotiations, where the Palestinians said, listen, we do want to go back to indirect negotiations, but there has to be clarification on especially settlements and borders, and there has to be an understanding about security and clear terms of reference. And the American side accepted that there was work to be done and that the Israeli mantra of just direct negotiations without preconditions was not going to be acceptable. So it really set the stage where the United States found itself, for the first time in a long time, with a very forthcoming Palestinian partner. And that is the situation that Mr. Netanyahu walked into here into Washington today.
Now, the so-called settlement freeze coming to an end, what would you expect for the situation in the occupied lands as well as the negotiation process?
Well, I think the settlement freeze is largely fraudulent, first of all. It has slowed the process, but it hasn't stopped it. There are so many caveats and exemptions and exceptions and what have you that, as your correspondent in Nablus was saying, he looks around and he can still see it going on. The point is that it expires in September. And if the settlers and their allies go on a rampage and start doing major building projects all over the West Bank, especially in and around East Jerusalem, it's going to be a diplomatic catastrophe. So I think one of the points that Obama made very clearly today, and it came through in their press conference, was that, listen, it's really not important whether you call it this moratorium or not, because that's really not it's really not that sort of thing. What we need is restraint on your side. You cannot go around just willy-nilly building settlements like this. And I think that point was made very strongly. I think it's one of the points that the Palestinians made to Obama a few weeks ago, and I think it's a point that Obama made clearly to Netanyahu. We'll see how deeply it was taken in.
Well, now, President Obama has said that U.S. policy towards Israel hasn't changed. The situation on the ground even shows that the U.S. is committing more to Israeli security. Just why haven't the Palestinians been able to see the truth behind all this and not have second thoughts about the U.S. position as a mediator and peacemaker?
Well, because the U.S. is the only possible interlocutor. I mean, who else would it be? The only country that is ready, willing, and able to be a negotiator is the United States. I don't think it's true that U.S. policy towards Israel hasn't changed. I think there are different registers at which U.S. Israeli relations operate. The president today was talking a great deal about the bedrock special relationship between the United States and Israel that is really not contested in the United States. The idea that the United States is committed to Israel's fundamental security, that is not contested. However, I do think there's been a fundamental change. And Ambassador Michael Oren, the Israeli ambassador in Washington, spoke the other day of a tectonic shift in the U.S.-Israel relationship, and he's right. Because what has happened is that over the past couple of years, largely because of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and ongoing tensions with Iran and other American concerns in the Middle East, Israel's actions are starting to be seen in a much broader strategic context. It's not just the bilateral relationship or U.S. domestic politics where there's a lot of support for Israel. It's now a question of how Israel's activities in the occupied territory affect everything the United States is trying to do in Iraq, in Afghanistan, with regard to Iran, with regard to Saudi Arabia, or anywhere else. This is now understood as an important strategic dimension. So getting a peace agreement is no longer an optional thing for the United States. It is essential. It is a vital national security interest to the United States. And I think the Israelis have had a hard time kind of understanding how important the United States now sees this as being. The Palestinians, as you rightly say, still have to deal with the situation in which the United States is not an honest broker. It is biased towards Israel. It does have a special relationship with Israel, and that's the way it's going to be. But there is no alternative broker, and the United States does see ending the occupation as a vital national security interest, and that those are two new things. So, there's really no alternative. I mean, I guess you could walk away and say, armed struggle till victory or something. That we've seen where that has gotten the Palestinians over the past 60 years. The only way out, especially the only way out of the occupation, is to find a negotiated agreement. And the only way to get one is dealing with the Israelis through the United States, however difficult and painful that's going to be.
All right. I'm
sorry. There's just no other way.
All right, we'll leave it there for the time being. Many thanks to Hussein Ibish, Senior Fellow with the American Task Force on Palestine. Well, now, the U.S. says it's willing to hold talks with Iran over its nuclear energy program if Tehran is, quote, serious about returning to negotiations in September.
Well, Washington's announcement comes shortly after Iran said it will return to talks with the so-called P5+1 if its conditions are met. Here's more on that.
Matches. In a letter to the foreign policy chief of the European Union, Catherine Ashton, the secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Saeed Jalili, said only when the direction of talks becomes clear will Iran hold talks with the P5+1. Jalili added that the ball is now in that group's court. Jalili has also called on those nations to quit what he says is the dual-track policy towards Tehran and to compensate for their past mistakes. He said that the international community considers talks under pressure dictatorial and uncivilized. The secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council further listed Tehran's conditions for negotiations with the five permanent members of the UN Security Council plus Germany. He said the other side must make it clear whether they are seeking cooperation or confrontation with the nation. Jalili also asked if the P5+1 is committed to negotiations without threats and pressure. He has also called on the group to clarify its position on Israel's nuclear arsenal. The same conditions were also declared by Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad last month. Tehran has set September the 1st as the date for the negotiations to start. The UN Security Council recently imposed a fourth round of sanctions on Iran under pressure from the United States and its Western allies. Tehran has dismissed the action as futile. Tehran says the punitive measures will backfire on the countries that pursue a policy of enmity towards the Iranian nation.
Will be able to break our nation's.
Well, now, four more U.S. said foreign troops have been killed in Afghanistan. Three soldiers were killed in bomb attacks in southern Afghanistan. A fourth trooper has also died in a bomb blast in the east. The nationalities of the soldiers are not known yet. The deaths pushed to 335, the number of U.S.-led foreign troops killed in Afghanistan so far this year. The U.S. military has warned that fighting will intensify in the upcoming months. The rise in the number of NATO deaths has reduced public support for the Afghan war.
A series of attacks in Iraq has claimed the lives of at least six people and wounded dozens of others. Officials say bombs targeted pilgrims arriving in the capital, Baghdad, for a major religious festival. Tens of thousands of worshippers are expected in the Iraqi capital for celebrations that will peak on Wednesday and Thursday. The festivities will be held at the mausoleum of Imam Musa Kazem, a direct descendant of the Muslim prophet Muhammad.
In Pakistan, at least three members of the ruling party have been shot dead in the southern city of Karachi. Police officials have told Press TV that unknown gunmen riding on a motorcycle opened fire at the Pakistan People's Party's office in the city. Four other people were also injured in the shooting. They were taken to a nearby hospital. Authorities say the regional head of the party is among the injured. Security forces have started a search operation to find the assailants. Well, the U.S. government has sued the state of Arizona over its controversial immigration law.
Washington says the new legislation unconstitutionally interferes with its authority to enforce a national immigration policy. The Justice Department says the law is a significant burden on federal and law enforcement agencies. The legal battle comes days after President Barack Obama pushed for countrywide immigration reform. Arizona's controversial law is to take effect later this month. It requires police there to investigate anyone suspected of being an illegal immigrant. The legislation appears to target Hispanics. It also triggered mass protests across the U.S. Arizona's two senators have slammed the Obama administration's lawsuit.
Now, ice cream is one of Italy's biggest selling products and it's undergoing a change of image. Press TV's Jeremy Inson tells us more.
On a sunny day in Italy, everywhere you look, people are indulging their love of ice cream, or gelato as it is called here. Throughout the 4 months from June to September, over 150 metric tons are sold at a value of 150 million euros to the economy. Even so, ice cream vendors are not resting on their laurels, with the traditional parlor changing its image in recent years.
It makes all the difference. All the ice cream parlors are very different, and we have chosen an environment with colors which are rustic and makes the atmosphere warm and welcoming.
The idea is to give people a luxurious feel to their surroundings and the product itself. Ice cream production in Italy dates back to the 14th century when chefs in Naples mixed fruit with frozen milk for the kings of the city. Its popularity spread throughout the courts of Europe, but it wasn't until the end of the 19th century and modern freezing techniques that the rest of the population could enjoy this treat. Today, the popularity of ice cream endures, and it is something enjoyed by old and young alike at all times of the day.
A lot of attention is paid to the selection of the ingredients, particularly here. The ingredients are to an exceptional standard and are cultivated here in Italy, with a lot of attention paid to their quality.
With its financial troubles, Italy is in need of as many good news business stories as possible. There is little doubt that Italian ice cream will remain popular for years to come, even if where you buy it changes appearance from time to time. Jeremy Inson, Press TV, Milan.
Well, that brings us to the end of another edition of the International News here on Press TV. Before we go away, let me just remind you of our website, allthews.presstv.ir.